Welcome to another episode of The Short Code, a podcast of wit and wisdom from the students at the University of Iowa Carver College of Medicine. I'm Dave Etler. Rick Guidotti was a fashion photographer working in New York, Milan, Paris, and London for everybody from Elle to Yves Saint Laurent. But in 1997, he and physician Diane McLean founded Positive Exposure, a nonprofit organization dedicated to using visual arts to highlight the beauty of genetic diversity and challenging the stigmas associated with differences in appearance. Positive Exposure presents diversity workshops, education and human rights programs, multimedia exhibitions for physicians, nurses, genetic counselors, healthcare professionals, elementary and secondary schools, legislators, the general public, and the University of Iowa and the College of Medicine are lucky enough to have him visiting today. Welcome, Rick Guidotti.
Hi, it's nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Also with us today are students Miriam Wiener and Kurt Wall. Welcome, guys. Welcome. I wanted to start off by saying that, you know, your work is visual, and this is an audio podcast. Mm. So we're going to link to we're going to link to some of the images. Hopefully you won't mind if we link to some of the images on our website.
Sure.
When we release this. But why don't you tell us a little bit about how Positive Exposure came about in the first place?
Well, you know, I'm a fashion photographer. I was always told who was beautiful, who the model of the moment was, who I needed to work with. And as a visual artist, I didn't see beauty just on covers of magazines. I see beauty pretty much everywhere. I was walking down Park Avenue near my studio one afternoon and saw a young woman with albinism. She didn't have pigmentation in her hair, her skin, or her eyes. She was stunning, yet never included in that beauty standard. When I tried to understand, when I wanted to research what albinism was, I found very different photographs of this gorgeous kid. I saw images of sadness, of sickness, of despair. These were images in medical textbooks. They were not images of this beautiful kid. They were images of people looking sad. And so I decided that it was time to make a change, to create an alternative to those negative medical type images to show the beauty in human diversity. And got managed to photograph this very first girl who came to my studio who was so stunning, yet she walked in with her head down, eyes down, zero self-esteem because of the teasing and the abuse she experienced every day in school because of her difference. But taking her through the throes of like the music, the fan, and the photo studio, and holding up a mirror and pointing, showing it to her and saying, look at yourself, you're magnificent. This kid got it. She saw what I saw. She saw a beautiful girl, and it changed everything. She grew like 5 billion feet and was bouncing all over the studio, and the images were so powerful. And literally, when she was leaving the studio, she was kissing everybody on both cheeks and saying ciao, and to understand and to see this transformation in this kid who finally was given the opportunity to see herself in the parameters of beauty. And it just changed everything. And this kid was going into school the next day, not with her head down, her hair in her face and looking down, but with her head up, proud of who she was, changing the way the kids in her classroom see her difference. Because this kid is fierce now, and she didn't care who saw it. And it was amazing. And that's how it starts. And that's how, as you start with one kid, and then you address one community, and then that community starts to grow, and kids start embracing and seeing the beauty and difference and inclusiveness and in a shared humanity. This kid, because she's different, is just like everyone else. And once you see that, it has all that sass, you know, and to present that to communities, it changes the way people see difference.
You know, one of the things that I noticed, I was able to attend your talk earlier today to the medical students, and one of the things I noticed earlier is that, you know, you came in maybe with an assumption, or maybe the initial people you spoke to about the project maybe had an assumption that, you know, these people didn't really want to have their photographs taken. But it seemed as though the story you were telling, it seemed as though that wasn't quite the case. They wanted to have their stories told.
They really want to have their stories told. This is a human movement. This is not just some photographer saying, let's show the world the beauty of difference, whether you want to or not. There are people banging on the door saying, tell my story. Let the world not only hear me, but see me and see how beautiful I am, how amazing I am. What I'm, don't see me, not, I don't want people to see my kid as because of his disability or his wheelchair or to see the importance of this kid, see the beauty of this kid through the way that his mom sees this kid, the way his dad sees this kid, that they see how the potential, not you know, not difficulties or challenges, but absolute ultimate potential.
Mm. Kurt, I understand that you also have, I don't know, been involved in this world of taking photographs of people with genetic diversity. And like, can you tell us a little bit about your work?
Yeah, absolutely. So last summer, the summer after my first year of med school, I spent about 10 or 11 weeks in Tanzania. I was working at a healthcare center and sort of took on an independent project working with children with albinism in the country. And as people who attended Rick's talk know, it's really just a terrible problem that they face in that country. There's just constant discrimination and threats of attacks. And my project was just sort of looking at trying to learn as much as I could about the situation and trying to find possible ways to help with the intent of returning possibly next year and implementing some of those ways that the situation could be fixed. And as far as the photography went, I brought a camera along when I visited this boarding school for lots of children with albinism. They were very willing to let me take their picture. They told me at the time that people had come before and were sort of exploiting them. I'm sure they were not referring
for no, no, I know the same groups though, yes.
Yeah, and so that was really sort of depressing to hear. Mm. So you had to just be really cautious around that issue.
Well, one, I think, just to clarify, because people didn't hear that part of the talk this morning, is in Tanzania, witch doctors are saying, bring me the bones of an albino, and I'll make a potion that will make you rich. So these kids are being murdered on their way home from school, pulled out of their homes at night, and having their arms and legs hacked off, which is happening. We thought, oh, it's just such a nightmare, and it hasn't happened in a while. Well, that's not true. Just about 10 days ago, an 8-year-old boy and his grandfather were both murdered, and his limbs were taken, and will most likely be sold on the black market for them to witch doctors. Hmm.
There must be a group of people out there who might think, well, I mean, these are people who are different enough that they're scary, that you know, maybe by discriminating against them, we're sort of protecting the health of the species and all that kind of, you know, stuff. What would you say to somebody who said that to you? I mean, you know, I mean, is this an urge that maybe a lot of people experience? This is why people are discriminated against.
And what comes to mind is if people are thinking that, well, we're protecting the human species, so these are terrible people and we should discriminate against them, that's, I would just say, shame on you. Yeah. I would just say, no. You're having a worry. You may be looking at those medical textbooks. You've got to meet these gorgeous kids. And if you do meet these gorgeous kids, I can assure you, you will change your attitude and your opinion and your perspective on these kids. You'll be enlightened when you hear the giggles of these kids. You know, when I first started understanding what chromosome 18 anomaly was. Of course, I didn't know what a chromosome 18 anomaly to begin with, because I was an art major. But when I went and looked in medical textbooks, I saw terrifying, scary images, and I made my own decisions about, oh, these kids are going to be scary. I see stillborns, and I see cleft palates, and I see trachs and mobility issues. I see kids drooling. I see lots of really negative, horrible images, and, you know, this is going to be really rough. But when I walked into the conference to meet these kids, and I had made my decision, this is going to be a tough shoot, I walked in and met some gorgeous, amazing kids. I was instantly surrounded by laughter. These kids, they were gorgeous kids. There were a lot of kids with trachs and cleft palates, and they were kids, and they were amazing. And you learn something every day. And to have that kind of an idea that if we, you know, well, let's be prejudiced against these kids to protect the human race. So then, you know, then that person's really going to need to get their ass to a positive exposure exhibition and meet some of these first kids. To have that opportunity, not to look away, you see in the eyes of that beautiful kid, not to look away, but to look longer and to hold your gaze long enough, you're going to see beauty, and that beauty washes over you and gives you such a burst of freedom to see beauty everywhere. And once you accept that and you revel in that, help yourself, you're enlightened, and you stay enlightened. And then you become, you can't help yourself, an advocate. You start teaching the world about what it is to see beauty in human diversity and to see beyond difference to that shared humanity.
I think another root cause to people having beliefs such as that is poor education levels. Those are just beliefs, incorrect beliefs, that are much easier to have if you don't have someone there telling you that they're wrong. And when I was in Tanzania, something that occurred to me was that just a root cause of all this superstition and this violence is just a poor education level. And in a place like Tanzania, when you're growing up, your education level ranges from decent to none. Mm. And most people are probably closer towards none. And so one possible way that can be fixed is by government officials or doctors going into more rural areas where the problem is much worse and explaining the truth about those myths that people hold about people with albinism.
We also found many high-level officials that were also afraid of the witch doctors and also believed in the curses that the witch doctors can cast on them. And many high-level officials also believed that the bones of a person with albinism will be helpful for an election. So it is education, but it's in a community where superstition is so great as well.
Yeah. It's not just poor people. It's not just,
it's superstition. And most people don't see what they don't see. There isn't, as we talked about this earlier, Kurt, there aren't hospitals or doctor's offices. Most people see witch doctors when their kids are sick because there's no place else to go. And so they go to these traditional healers who are also witch doctors, and they're not all bad people. But at the same time, you've got to go much deeper into the culture and the community to raise awareness. I mean, every country that I've been to in Africa, and like in Mali, they believe that people with albinism don't die, they simply disappear. Well, the reason is in Mali many years ago, if a person had a public funeral and had albinism, they would exhume the body and use the body parts for people to protect the bodies of their deceased and loved ones. Their loved ones, they would say, oh no, they just disappear. So these things go on, and there's also beliefs in other parts of Africa where albinism will, if you have intercourse with a virgin, you will then have opportunities to cure yourself of HIV. It just goes on and on. The discrimination is so great, all based on superstition. But there's some wonderful legends out there as well. Like in the Cook Islands, there's that one legend of the Momoke, which is a legend based on the very first person born with albinism in the universe. And it's a story that's based on fear and hatred, and then acceptance and understanding and communication and friendship, then love. And out of that love comes the very first person with albinism. We actually went to did a live radio program in the Cook Islands, and all these people calling saying, well, we're from this island called the Atataki, and we are the direct descendants of the Momoke, and you must come. So I was traveling with Diane McLean, and we drove out to this, we got a boat and got out to this island, got a driver and got us out to this island, and there they all were, 15 people waiting for us on the beach, but not one of them had albinism. They were so proud of this legend that there were people with albinism wannabes in the Cook Islands. So it's extraordinary to see its attitude and perspective.
Speaking of perspective, I sort of going back to what we were talking about you going and looking at these pictures and textbooks and how some of them are just horrifying, and that's a lot of what we get during class. I think I've tweeted about it before that I hate the dead baby lectures. There's lectures that we really see a series of pictures of dead babies, and it doesn't really give you a good idea of what you'd actually be encountering in your real practice, what these babies looked like when they were alive. And I found it particularly striking when you showed the picture of from the medical textbook of the boy with Marfan syndrome, and then the picture of the boy in the
Billy.
Pool.
Yeah. Sure.
And it was just as strong an illustration of this way that he looks different, and it gave me just as much ability to sort of see somebody and diagnose somebody with that, but it wasn't dehumanized. It was still a human, and I think that's a really beautiful thing that can sort of be taken away from this by other medical students or prospective medical students.
Awesome. It strikes me that a lot of the things that healthcare does, or the way that healthcare does things, is for the convenience of the people doing these things, so that, yes, it's a lot easier to put a kid up against a wall and take his picture and then black out his eyes than it is to find him in a pool. And yet, there's a lot to be gained from seeing these folks as individuals, as people, and with their, in their environments and in their with their challenges and with their successes and all that kind of stuff, too.
Well, quite often you're going to see in your clinic a very special case of a kid with a specific or an extreme version of, say, neurofibromatosis, and you need to get a quick photograph of that. You don't have natural light. There isn't a swimming pool or a jungle gym to play on, so you stand the kid up and you take a photograph. I understand that. Mm. That's great. But there's also other ways. But you can be inspired by looking at these images, not to just stand there and do your passport-type photograph, but you can engage that kid. in. It doesn't have to be scary. You engage that family. Mm-hmm. There's an environment that you can create as physicians, as clinicians, to make sure that that kid is represented, but is also has that an experience, an enjoyable experience. It's not just, you know, stand up there and put your input there, I'm going to put that black bar over your eyes. There's that's a human being, and I can, and truly, I can see a change in those new photographs that are starting to come out.
I was going to ask, you know, have you seen a difference?
Well, we also supply a lot of those images as well, but I see them changing, I hear them changing. We're working with various clinicians and showing different, teaching doctors how to take a great photo. But, you know, the thing is that there's definitely a science. I say this all the time. There's a great science to medicine, of course, but there's also such a great art to science, too, and it's allowing yourself to reach that part of who you are, that vision, that artistic component of who makes you a fantastic physician. That's going to bring it even further. But to show that there is an opportunity and another perspective. There's never been another perspective until the last 10 years or so. But this is the way you did it. It was standardized. You stand up against the wall, you put your underwear, and we're going to place the black bar. But now I've got moms and dads and family members just saying, please use a million photographs of my kid. Just don't use that photograph of that other kid. Use this one. I don't care. Take it. Use it however you can, and use it a million times. But help the world see this kid through my eyes, not to see him as a disease or a diagnosis, but as a human being.
You know, I noted that you take your discussion to elementary and secondary schools, and one of the and this is probably a product of being in Iowa City, where my kids go to school. And what has struck me about Iowa City specifically is that they try very hard to be accepting of people with genetic diversity issues, autism, physical disabilities, and that's one of the things that I was thinking about, you know, during this. Is I'm pretty pleased with that, because everybody's different, and everybody's. I think it's great that you bring these to elementary schools, because that's where a lot of this, these attitudes, these negative attitudes begin, and are perpetuated, and where a lot of the harm is done for the people with those issues. So that's terrific. Do you? You know, is the effect immediate when you go to these places, or do you have to, you know, is it something that you find needs to be reinforced?
We're developing programming and curricula around this positive exposure and PEARLS. And just to clarify, it's genetic, physical, cognitive, and behavioral differences, so not just genetic things, conditions. Right. But we're creating opportunities for kids in elementary school, so to speak, where the kids can read, can hear about through a photograph. They have a photograph and they get a little bio about that kid, and maybe they can go online to a password protected site, teacher driven, to show the kids speaking or playing in the playground or with friends or petting the dog or whatever. But kids do it, and then kids talking, and they get a little voice, they get the visual, they also get the audio, they're providing the voice, and then they can ask questions, and they can, and in the elementary schools, what we're doing is they're creating these beautiful letters, and they're going into art class, and they're drawing after they ask questions about what's your favorite color, your favorite pets, do you have brothers, and then they're creating this great artwork, and then in creative writing classes, they're writing little stories and telling a little bit about themselves, and then asking them other questions. And do you like pizza? What's your favorite color? Do you like Justin Bieber? And then asking these questions and talking about movies. And then the kids have an opportunity through templates to respond, and it comes back to the school. It's not like an instant boom, we're going to accept all differences. It starts the dialogue. Mm-hmm. It breaks down the fear instantly. So the next time that kid meets them, I know somebody like that. I know, that's okay. He's just like me. He likes Justin Bieber, or he doesn't like Justin Bieber. Or it breaks down the fear. It addresses those issues, but it celebrates a shared humanity. These kids get to see that they're not that different than the rest of the kids in that classroom, and also get a chance to also celebrate their own uniqueness as well. So it really is creating opportunities to provide an more inclusive society, and not instant. It doesn't have to be instant, where there's that wonderful moment where there's an aha moment, but it happens over time, and it's gradual, and you get this. It's stopping those moments where you have disability day or diversity afternoon it's those things drive me they're just so frustrating, because it has to be an everyday language. We have to talk about this every day. It has to constantly, not just on that one day a year or that one week or the diversity month. This is about the humankind, humanity. We diversity should be the first thing in our mouth, and it should go into the first second this kid has an experience in the school environment to his last day of professional education. This should be every single day, and then it should go on to families, and just to really kind of look at this, to address these issues, to make sure that this is part of our dialogue every day, that it's not so when you see somebody walking down the street with a physical difference, you either stare or look away, that you now have opportunities and alternatives to those.
Have you had any experiences with people sort of responding negatively to what you're doing? Maybe that they feel like you're, it's a form of I can never pronounce the
voyeurism.
Word. That's the one I was, yeah. Voyeurism.
No, because it's not. I'm not a voyeur. This is a partnership and a collaboration. Everyone that we photograph is all part of this human movement to change where the world sees difference. So we're there. We're there not only with that individual, but usually with their family, their community, their close friends, their sisters, their siblings, their parents. It's all working together to create an image that's going to change the way the world approaches this difference. So it's never that. And if you've seen the photographs, so you mm-hmm. can't. You'll never get any kind of, just from the imagery that I've shown today, you'll never have that concept. I remember. Once I was starting to do a book on just albinism, and I thought, well, someone said, well, no, you should show all the other genetic conditions too. And I was a little apprehensive, thinking that I'm going to be a little afraid, because I don't want people to think this is a book of difference or oddities. And they said, well, if anybody's going to, first of all, taking a look at your images, they're all celebratory. So if anyone's going to take that, if they're going to think of that in terms of, like, this is going to be a book of oddities, they need to have that book. We need to give them that book, because then they'll get it and they'll realize that this is a book about humanity. This is a book about a joy and celebration. Of life and a life force. So negative people actually do not. I think I do think, though, it can be misunderstood if someone else is explaining it until you see it. I think we've had some resistance until people get to see me or get to hear what the project's about or get to see photographs, and then once you get, then it's embraced. But sometimes there's a little caution at first, which, and so there should be.
With that in mind, I would say everybody should, if they're listening to this podcast, you really do need to look at the images, because they just show joy and beauty, and in no way is it a book of freak show kind of things. It's all very beautiful and showing people as opposed to really what's wrong with them.
I was not wrong. I love that the image of, what was his name, Randy?
Randy jumping in the air.
Jumping in the air.
I don't talk to my
wife. Looking super, you know, I don't know, just like a kid, you know.
A rock star.
Yeah,
he is a rock star. He's
yeah.
amazing.
I mean, it's terrific, and it's. I think it's how, you know, as a parent, I want my kids to feel about themselves,
exactly.
You know, it's just terrific to
well, ultimately, this whole positive exposure, the spirit of difference, is really not really just to address kids living with genetic, physical, behavioral, or cognitive differences, but there's a universal message. It's about all of us. It's about all of us having that opportunity to look in the mirror and say, I like what I see. I rock. Mm-hmm. And that's what it's about. And it's spread out to present that image back and to see complete and absolute potential and to embrace that. Mm-hmm.
Do you ever see yourself going back to just doing fashion photography? I would imagine not, but it's worth asking.
I am doing fashion photography. Yeah. Again, I'm doing the beauty photography that I've always wanted to do. It's a beauty that I don't have to follow anybody else's rules. There isn't a cookie cutter stamp on it. It's beauty, and I'm letting my friends and all my community to define that for me. And they're defining it. Billy is defining it. Randy and Kiara and Sarah, they define it, and it's incredible. So in a way, this is the ultimate beauty in fashion photography that I'm doing currently. So this is great, because that's what it's all about, beauty.
Yeah.
And that's what this is about.
Yeah.
We were talking earlier about a project you're going to start in Washington, D.C., mm-hmm. With the genetics project. Do you mind elaborating on that a little bit?
It's nothing's definite right now. Okay. So, I mean, it's definite, but I can't really go too much on it because we don't have all the things in concrete laid out. But there's a wonderful exhibition at the Smithsonian called the Genome Me Presentation. And we're working on an exhibition that will go alongside of this Genome Me exhibit that will actually put the face of genetics out there. So we'll be doing a cross-culture, a cross-cut, or cross-section of humanity, all ages, all kids, all adults, and but showing the beauty of difference and the human diversity within that, within our shared similarities and humanity. But I can't give too many specifics, but June 13th?
Mark your calendar.
Yeah, I just thought that was a really, really interesting project that you had described earlier, especially just because of how important genetics is becoming in medicine and how changing that field is, and how important it is to the future of medicine, just connecting it with everyone in every area of the world. and then making sure along with your photography that it's not perceived in the wrong way.
Right. Well, I think it's also important that all this talk of the human genome and all these great clinics and all these great ideas about, you know, the stem cell and those wonderful stuff, is that we don't forget that we're talking about people and that we see them all the time. And we see them in all their glory, see them all their giggles, and we hear them, and we really get a sense of why we're doing this. I mean, there are no bad guys here. These are in the people's genome. They're all here celebrating in so many different ways, but we just want to make sure that we have that visual and that voice and make sure that everyone has that opportunity to be seen and heard.
So here at the Carver College of Medicine, we're sort of currently redoing our curriculum, and obviously there will be a large genetics component to it. If you were in charge of designing the genetics portion of the curriculum here, what would it look like?
Ooh, that's a great question. I love that question.
Thanks.
I think a lot of it would be the way to start it, would be starting off with showing some of these positive exposure images, telling a couple stories, whether I did it or we did it through a curriculum, but also have an opportunity to access a variety of genetic conditions in your clinical environment, but on your web, on your phone, but being able to pull up those images, not just being at a show or a presentation, but pull up these images so you can see what is a connective tissue disorder, what does that look like, and then you can pull up, you know, Lois Dietz, Ehlers-Danlos, Marfan syndrome, they all pop up, and then you can see, but you see these images of people, you see these images, you really get a sense of what it looks like to have a connective tissue. You can see working and written by the genetic support group itself, organization, they at a glance, what does that mean, what are the tenets of, say, Marfan syndrome, how does that present itself, but then you can have video, you can have voices, it's all there. But then it's also, have opportunities for people living with genetic conditions and their families to come in and be seen and be heard and tell their stories to medical students. But also to have opportunities constantly to make sure that the families are also seen as part of the healthcare team. Because it's the mom and dad are going to know better what that kid's going to put up with and what that kid's not going to put up with. And so I just think right now, I think there's a lot of wonderful stuff going on in medicine, but to really make sure that, and also the thing is, and I know that this school is like that, because I've spoken to lots of different med students here, and they all have such wild, differently backgrounds, and they're all, it's bringing in, like, making sure that all that stuff that you've done in your past comes with you, and it helps shape you as a physician, and all the stuff you want to do, well, doesn't necessarily have to be only medicine, because it's all going to help kind of create the physician that you're going to, that you will be, and that will in turn affect all those great kids that you're going to be working with and families.
I think we got a small taste of that last year, actually, in a couple of our courses. We were learning about sickle cell anemia, and we talked about the whole biochemical background behind it and how it presents with different symptoms. And then at the end of learning about this condition, we had a little boy named TJ come in and talk to our entire class, and it was just so great to put a face on it, on the disease, and to see him come in, and he was just so full of energy the entire time, and it was just really great to have that correlation between what we had learned and what we had learned about, and then being able to see how it actually presents in someone. And I think applying that to...
Okay, there are a lot of challenges. A lot of sickle cell, he's got a road ahead of him. But the kid, he's just a kid, and to give him the opportunity to be a kid, that's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
It's incredible.
It really is.
One question I have is, obviously the focus of medicine is to cure things. So if we... As we progress in our knowledge of genetics and our knowledge of the cure of these genetic differences, these other differences that we've talked about, I mean, are we going to lose something?
Well, I don't know whether we're going to lose something. I think it's very important that, yes, of course, we want to make sure that people can live the best and the most comfortably they can and do and be as productive as we want as they can possibly be in not much pain and can function well and offer something to communities. I don't see that that I would want to put any kind of a blockade to development of, say, a cure for certain types of diabetes or giving a kid an opportunity to be able to have more of a cognitive abilities, and that's all wonderful, and all that differences and being able to fit in and all that stuff is great, and that's we're going to follow that. Science is going that way anyway, but right now we're not looking at that far ahead. Right now we're looking at the kids that are sitting here next to me and looking at their families right now, that there is isn't a cure for Duchenne, and it's progressive and spinal muscular atrophy, and there isn't a cure for these kids right now. We give them hope, but we also respect and honor those kids that are here right now, and we make sure that they have a voice and they have visibility, and that they're here and they're remembered, and we know who they are, and they've made their mark, and that mark stays on all of us and will stay on us, all of us forever.
Well, we've been talking today with photographer Rick Guidotti, founder of Positive Exposure, an organization that seeks to use the visual arts as a vehicle to promote understanding of those with genetic differences. You can check that out at positiveexposure.org, correct?
Yes.
And I want to say special thanks to the Iowa Institute of Human Genetics and the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics Community and STEM Foundation for bringing him to us today. And thank you to our students, Kurt Wall and Miriam Wiener, for joining us. Thank you so much.
Right back at
you.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks for listening to The Short Coat. The Short Coat is produced by the Writing and Humanities Program at the University of Iowa Carver College of Medicine with support from medical student government. You can visit us online at theshortcoat.com. You can find us on Facebook, and you can follow us on Twitter, where we're known as The Short Coat. We also take comments and story ideas and the occasional rant from you, our listeners, via email at theshortcoats@gmail.com or leave us a voice message at 347-SHORT-CT. That's 347-746-7828. The executive producers are Jason T. Lewis and David T. Etler. Our theme music is by Revolution Void from the album Increase the Dosage. Find them at www.revolutionvoid.com.